Good morning, everyone. This is Renee Rentmeester, creator, executive producer of the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. And today we have someone very special for you. Her name is Brianna Lawson. Brianna, how are you?
I'm doing very well. Hello?
Hello, Brianna?
Hi, sorry, the connection's sometimes bad here, but I'm doing very well.
Okay. That's great. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm 19, and I recently graduated from FSDB May 24th of 2019, and when I'm older, I want to aspire as a fashion designer and hopefully maybe do something with cooking along the lines at that point.
You sound like a creative person.
Yes, I love to be creative in any way, shape, or form, whether it be art, designing, or cooking.
Well, tell us a little bit about yourself.
My blindness, what I have is called optic nerve hypoplasia. It's where my nerves and the optic nerves in my eyes are not fully developed, and that caused my visual impairment.
I see. So how much do you see? What do you see?
Actually, I can see more out of my right eye than I can my left. But when I was born with this condition, I wasn't born with any sight at all. And I did not gain my sight until I was 2 years old, I believe.
Wow, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. I've never heard of that. So it sounds like it grew into place in a way as you got older.
Yes.
So your parents probably thought that you would be blind all of your life. How did they take that?
Well, it was actually pretty scary because there was a night when my grandparents and I, we were in the pool, and one of them was getting out to turn the light on so that my grandmother could get out, and she was holding me at the time, and they turned on the light, and when they turned on the light, I had jerked my head back, and that was my very first reaction to light. So that was one of the ways that we had found out that I was gaining a little bit of sight.
Oh, wow. Sort of like, that's amazing. They must have been really excited at that point.
Yes.
Well, tell me, so what kind of school did you go to? What was your education like?
In the start of my life, I went to Akalua Elementary School, which is right here where I live in Hawthorne. It was actually kind of crazy when I was younger. There was a point where I kind of switched between two schools, Akalua and Melrose Elementary. I mostly stayed at Akalua, which they were very good there with my eye condition, and they were very understanding, and they helped me do new things and tackle learning a different way because of my eye condition.
How did they have you? What did they have special books or anything?
Well, actually, back when I was in Akalua, I started meeting up with a vision teacher who I've had for a good couple years, and they would make my work large print so that way I can see it. And also, that was also the year that I had also got applied for the Vision of Blind Services, and I had gotten a CCTV magnifier, and that has also helped a lot as well.
That's great. So tell me about your cooking expertise. You sent a recipe over to us today. Give me some tips on how you, as someone who's visually impaired, has overcome that with your cooking.
Well, actually, there's a lot of people in my family that cook, but there is one particular person that I have learned my cooking expertise from, and that is my grandmother. She basically, honestly, in my opinion, kind of lives in the kitchen, and I've learned some of my cooking tips from her. She's also a really good baker, and I've learned some baking skills from her as well. But the thing is, though, I didn't learn from just her. I also learned how to cook when I went to Florida School for the Deaf and the Blind at St. Augustine. And basically, with their school, when you first come, you don't start cooking right away. You don't really start cooking until your junior year. You don't cook till you're a junior and you continue cooking your senior year. And they teach you all different kinds of kitchen tips and stuff like that. Like when we cooked, they had a touch screen oven and stove over there where we can easily see it. And they also put Braille labels on the buttons on everything there. And they had talking microwaves and things like that to help us to be better in the kitchen.
What are some of the tips that you've learned from your grandmother?
She taught me how to, so basically with my grandmother, she had taught me how to make stuff like brownies in a crock pot. And they are very, very good. And I actually cooked them a couple months ago. They were really good.
How long do you put the brownies in the crock pot?
I really can't remember, but it's a really good recipe. But I think it's probably within like maybe 1 or 2 hours.
Wow, that's
amazing. Yeah. And it doesn't.
Are they hard to get out?
No, they're actually not hard to get out. Because my grandmother, she uses Pam cooking spray to make sure the brownies don't stick, and they're very good.
Oh, that's great. That's great. What other kind of tips has she taught you, or that you learned from the school in St. Augustine? We had a bunch of the kids from there on our show one time, and it was just like an amazing, uplifting, great feeling when they were there.
Yeah. Well, actually, from my school, whenever we cooked in the kitchen, I remember a dorm staff that was there, and she was in my dorm when I was in my junior year. And I was making green bean casserole. I was making green bean casserole for our special Thanksgiving dinner. And I was opening up the can, and I was having trouble getting the lid off of the can after I opened it. And so my dorm staff over there, she taught me this trick where I take a strong magnet from the refrigerator and I put the magnet on the lid, and the lid sticks on to the magnet.
Wow, that's so simple.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
Yeah. That's one of the tricks that she has taught me. And then I started making my peppermint bark during my junior year, and ever since then, I decided to make it a tradition. But my peppermint bark that I make it every Christmas, and everyone that I seem to make it for absolutely loves it, and it really, actually, the peppermint bark, every single time I make it, it doesn't really even last a day. It doesn't even last a day.
And oh my God, that sounds so good. Even when I saw it, I'm like, oh, this sounds great. You know, we've all been in this pandemic thing. This is great to like start preparing for Christmas and the holidays. And well, you know what? Why don't you describe how you make your peppermint bark now while we're speaking of it?
Okay. Well, actually, I was looking up some recipes online and I found a recipe for reindeer peppermint bark. But I decided to modify it a little bit to my creativity and other things like that. The recipe does use white chocolate, but for me, I use almond bark. I like almond bark. So really the ingredients that you really need is a big cookie sheet, some parchment paper, some almond bark, mint Oreos, peppermint M&Ms, candy canes, and I added one more little ingredient to the bark to make it look more festive. And I like to get assorted Christmas sprinkles to put on top of it.
Wow, you so how do you go about making it for our audience? Tell them how you prepare it.
So really all that you really do is put the parchment paper on the cookie sheet, and then you take your almond bark out and you put it in a big bowl and you melt it in the microwave for about 1 to 2 minutes. But between those 1 to 2 minutes, you should take the almond bark out of the microwave and stir it occasionally. That way it'll help the melting process more and it'll stop the almond bark from burning. And actually that's what I learned the very first time I made it, is to always stir so that way it'll melt faster and it'll be less likely to burn. And that's what I've learned. The first time I made it. And if it's not melted all the way, put it in for an additional 30 seconds to 1 minute. And once you're done with that, you have to have your cookie sheet and parchment paper ready, because the chocolate will harden pretty quickly at that point. So when you do it, you quickly put it on the parchment paper and the cookie sheet, and you spread it around to all the edges, and you even it out, and you crush up your Oreos and your candy canes. And I don't crush up the M&Ms. I just leave them whole. Yeah. And I crush up the candy canes, and I sprinkle all of them on there, and then I put the sprinkles on top, and I sprinkle a little bit of the leftover almond bark on top. So whenever I make my peppermint bark, I always make sure to at least save a little bit more of the almond bark so I can sprinkle got on top of all the toppings and on the bark.
That sounds amazing. And for our people who are, you know, listening, that must be an awfully pretty sight too for the holidays.
Yes, it's actually really good. And I usually put it in the freezer for a couple hours until it hardens, and it's really good, really, really, really good. And I made it my senior year, and everybody loved it. I stayed in an apartment at Florida School for the Deaf and the Blind called Wortman Hall. And I've had two very amazing dorm staff there. And I got to make my peppermint bark for the Christmas party that we were having in the dorms. And at our Christmas party, the deaf and the blind would collaborate together for this party. And the staff had gotten pizzas and other different things there too, but I had thought of this idea of making my peppermint bark again, and I brought it up to my dorm staff, and they loved the idea, so I got the ingredients, and I made the peppermint bark, and some of my friends from school got to actually watch me make the peppermint bark, and I explained to them step by step how to make it, and I also brailled the recipe for them so that way they can make it when they're at home as well. And I had brought it over to the Christmas party, and it was a big success. Everyone absolutely loved it. There was absolutely nothing of that peppermint bark left. Every single bit was gone.
I can believe it. I want to make it like right now, even though it's not the holidays. It's easy. You got chocolate and you got peppermint. It sounds great. Hey, for the people in our audience who don't know about the St. Augustine School for the Deaf and the Blind, could you describe it for them? It's basically a public school, and correct?
Well, kind of, but it's a public school for the deaf and the blind. So you can go over to FSDB when, before you go to pre-K, they have an early learning center there where blind and deaf kids learn early on before they get to preschool and pre-K, that sort of thing. So it's early learning through continuing ed. And they with continuing ed, they let you stay till you are 22 years old, and that's the really cool part about them. And they'll help you with really anything that you need. They'll if you need anything that'll help you to learn better, they'll help with that as well. And FSDB is also their own school district.
I didn't realize that. But so it's interesting. We've had people who were deaf and blind on our show. It's interesting. How did you communicate with your deaf compadres?
Well, actually, with my field of vision, I can't really see well enough to see what they're actually trying to sign to mm-hmm. me. So really what I do to communicate with my deaf friends, I usually either text them or I take a piece of paper with me and a pen, and we usually have conversations through writing. We have recreation activities when we are at school at night, and when you're in high school, the blind department mix in with the deaf department, and so that's really cool. So whenever we go, we can really make new friends and communicate, and that's really how I communicate with some of my deaf friends.
Wow. You know, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, because the technology on the paper is a great idea, but like the technology, the texting on the cell phone, that's amazing because you text to them and they can see it. They text back to you and you can hear it.
Uh-huh. Yes.
That is just wonderful. We had on our show, we had couples, one of whom was deaf and one was blind, and so we discussed that. But that's, you know, technology is so amazing, isn't it, Brianna?
Yes, it really is. I mean, the things that you can accomplish when communicating with people, but honestly, even though we all know how much technology has advanced, I really prefer writing to them because it kind of gives me more of that connection. It really gives me more of the vibe that I'm actually communicating with them, because when you're communicating with someone, you don't want to be just, you should be face-to-face, you know, like face-to-face when communicating with them.
Sure. Wow. And, you know, I'm sorry, go on.
But yeah, it's just really, I prefer to be really face-to-face with communicating, but whenever I text them, it's through, like, is whenever I have, like, long distance. But if I forget pencil and paper, I would always bring my phone as a backup.
Wow, that's great. You know, you're like me. I'm sort of like a back-in-the-day person. I like to handwrite my notes instead of taking everything on the computer. Yeah. And it also seems more personal, doesn't it?
Yes, and that's what I like about it. And I feel like you can really keep new friends that way as well. That way you can know a little bit more about them on a more deeper personal level.
Oh, that's a great idea. You know, I've never thought about that, because I just thought, well, this must be sort of difficult, you know, to go back and forth. You know, one person's blind, the other person's deaf. But that's really nice. And to do it on the paper is very interesting. So did you stay there all week, and then they pick you up on the weekends, take you back home? Is that how it works?
Yes, they would pick us up on a Sunday, and they would drop us off back home on Friday. And usually, and actually for some students, they have a very long ride ahead of them. But for me, FSDB was only an hour and a half away. And
that's not bad.
And with my bus schedule that I had, I rode bus 8, and with me, they would last, and when we go to school, but when they dropped everyone off back home to their family, I got dropped off first.
You know, you're so young, Brianna, and a lot of people, they just believe that people who are blind or visually impaired are usually older. What kind of a message do you have for them?
Well, honestly, the message that I have for them is to definitely keep trying and don't let other people tell you what you can and can't do without trying it and seeing it for yourself. I have dealt with that kind of diversity all of my life, and one thing that I really do not like in most people is when we people that are blind or have other disabilities tend to be underestimated. You know, when we get told you can't do this because you're of your vision or your blindness, and it irritates me, because, you know, just because we have a disability, that doesn't mean that we can't do certain things. We just do it in a different way. And also, for me, I really don't like being called, I don't really like a disability being called really a disability. I call it a different ability, because whenever I think of different ability, it doesn't mean stuff that we can't do. It just, I think of stuff that we can do, but we do it in a whole entire different way. Because when I hear someone say disability, that's just automatically, in my opinion, labeling you, saying, oh, you can't do this because you're blind, or you have this, or you have that. And that is not all entirely true, because we can also be independent, you know, and we can also be independent, you know, without having others tell us what we can and can't do because of our vision, you know? Like, don't knock it till you try it. I mean,
right.
That's, yeah.
It makes sense. We usually don't use the term disability very much at all, if ever. Sometimes people don't get it right away. But as you say, you know, like you've got your whole body, okay? You've got your mind, you've got everything. To be disabled, it sounds like, you know, someone just shut you right off. And that's not even near the truth.
Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, for me, if people try to underestimate me or anyone else, my mindset is, you know what, bite at me, I'll bite back harder and show you what I can do. And that's the mindset that I have whenever people try to underestimate me. I keep it positive, but I tell them, you know what, look here, it's not about the stuff that we can't do, it's about what we can do. And also, like, before everything gets wrapped up, I do have another little cooking tip. I had made pancakes at my mom's, and usually when you make pancakes, you have to wait till they're bubbling up before you flip them, but for people that are not sighted, or for people that are visually impaired, a tip that I have is whenever I make the pancakes, I usually wait for the pan to stop sizzling before I flip. So when the pan stops sizzling, that's when I know, okay, it's time to flip them.
That's a great tip. That's a great tip for anyone, because, you know, I really suck at making pancakes, Brianna. So, so this is, I can make just about anything but pancakes, you know, they come out looking pretty sad. So this will be my tip from you to me. And next time I make pancakes, I'll think of you and I'll think of this tip and use your tip. Well, as we're coming to an end now, Brianna, tell us how people can get a hold of you if they'd like to speak with you.
Well, if you want to speak with me, if you actually want to speak with me, anyone who is blind or visually impaired, I have an email. So if you at briannapage875@gmail.com. So if you want any cooking tips, I'm always around to give them to you and give you any sort of cooking advice that they want to know.
Well, thank you, Brianna. This has been Brianna Lawson, and I'm Renee Rentmeester, the Cooking Without Looking TV show and podcast. You've been great, Brianna, and I'm going to go try those pancakes. And if you want to get a hold of us, we're at 305-200-9104 or our website, www.cookingwithoutlookingtv.com. Take care. Have a wonderful day. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.